That's Pavement. They're performing next Tuesday, the 7th of March, at the Civic Theatre. This morning I spoke to Bob, who takes care of percussion, harmonica and keyboards in Pavement. They're obviously on the road in Australia at the moment, so I had a bit of a chat to him. This is how it went down.
How's it to be back playing with Pavement in this part of the world?
It's always been pretty good, to be honest, from the start. It's always been felt more like a vacation than a tour. I think maybe because even this year, really. But I think that especially in the States, the pace has always been pretty demanding, like, you know, playing six nights a week. And then when you come down here, things just always seem to be a little more casual and vacation-like, and the places are relaxing. And so, yeah, the vibe is pretty good. And, you know, at this point, unlike when we started in Auckland in 2010, we're pretty comfortable with what we're doing. So all in all, it's about as relaxing a vibe as a Pavement tour get.
It's only been a couple of years since you guys decided to all get back together and start doing your Pavement thing again. How are the shows going in general, and how's it feel to be back on the Pavement horse?
In general, it's been great. We added a member this year, a woman named Rebecca Cole. She's really good keyboard and synth player, and she can sing and she can play percussion. So that's kind of broadened our horizons. We're actually able to play about 10 or 15 songs that we couldn't play very well before. And then in other cases, she's improved us on other songs. You'll see, hopefully. But yeah, we're just more... we're a more comfortable band than we were in 2010, and certainly in the 90s. And we have more, we actually practiced quite a bit. By our standards, like 10 days is a long time. And it perhaps is because we started last year at Primavera Festival in Barcelona. So it was kind of probably good to bite off more than we could chew right off the bat.
Yes.
Then, of course, we've been also... needs mentioning that a fan of in particular of your radio station, a guy named Mike Fry, an American who's been living in Auckland for the last 3 years, our tour manager, and he's looked after us the whole year, and it's the first time we've worked with him, and he's decidedly on the ball, I guess, both when he's cruising around in his car with his kid in Auckland listening to you and your mates play music, and also looking after Pavement all over the world. So yeah, Mike Fry says 95 FM's the important one.
That's pretty classic. So is he a Kiwi?
No, he and his wife are Americans, and she has no insult to you or me, Johnny, she has some sort of real job.
Yes.
That I guess she in fact, I've got another friend I found out that just got transferred for better pay to Fiji. Yeah, I mean, as an American, if you want to avoid, like, the perils of assault weapon ownership, you jump at the opportunity to go live somewhere else for equal or more pay. And, like, you know, certainly if somebody asked me to work a job where I made more than the pittance that I make in the U.S. horse racing industry, I dive into any situation in New Zealand. But, you know, it's horse racing, so, you know, you can't really expect people to come knock on your door very often.
Yes. Just going back to the Primavera headline slot, that is quite a show to have to perform straight out the gate.
You're not kidding.
Was that like? Yeah.
I was there. We played like a warm-up thing, which was quite wise. We played for about 1,200, hardcore. It was a pure confidence builder. We played in L.A. at the Fonda Theater about 2 or 3 weeks before, and that came off the back of practicing in Portland quite a bit. So we were about as prepared as we could possibly be. Now, that being said, in Barcelona, when you headline, that means you play at like 2 in the morning. It was just one of those things that, you know, we signed up for it and they were very enthusiastic. And I think I'm always nervous. I'm going to pretend that you and I aren't on the air, Johnny. I suffer from anxiety.
Yeah, cool.
My bandmates really sort of don't, but I could sense that they were nervous. So I just kind of brought my own personal panic attack to the stage. I kind of sense that you can sort of sense when your bandmates are sort of when they that's sort of my job is band algorithm.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I could sense that they're a little bit tight, which happens. It usually happens at the store. Like it happened in Tokyo the other night. You know, so yeah, part of my job is to make a fool of myself and loosen them up. So, but I think that in the end, looking back on Barcelona, without being a nitpicker, we had a lovely time. And like a lot of pavement experiences this year, the enthusiasm of the crowd has carried us through any tumultuous moment. So, we'll expect the same in Auckland if they show up there.
Yes. I mean, I've heard a friend, Steve Gunn from New York, has been down to New Zealand and toured a couple of times. And he was down here not too long ago, and he said that he'd seen you guys.
He blew us off the stage in Brooklyn. Yeah. He and, like, some of his mates who, like, really know how to play their instruments well. They startled us. We played with four different bands in Brooklyn during our stint there. And Steve's a wizard.
He is a wizard. He's an incredible musician. But he said that this version of Pavement is the best. You know, you guys are playing at your peak at the moment.
That's nice to hear. We learned about 70 songs, and we play about 25 to 30 a night. And if we get it all right, like, you know, if things come together, I think it's always interesting. I think some bands, like I've been around some bands, like in fact, let's look no further than Steve Gunn. Like a guy like that takes the stage with these like really accomplished musicians. And like, not to say that like, you know, Pavement doesn't have some brilliant musicians, because we do, but it is sort of a mixed bag. Especially with me in, but it is like a, I just always think like, I mean, I remember touring with Stereolab like back in the 90s when they're a well-oiled machine or High Llamas or something like that. Somebody like, it must be so weird to take the stage with just complete confidence that you're not going to screw up,
yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And then it's just, Pavano's always just kind of had a strange approach and then tried to pull it all together and make it seem that we had it all together. I mean, it was it'll be the same thing. It's still always a bit frenzied, and then I've always felt like maybe other bands have this going for them too, but that our audience sort of is like cheering for us, like almost like we're like a football side that wins half our matches, sort of, you know, like maybe they can sort of carry us over the top with their enthusiasm. Yeah. But it's lovely of Steve Gunn to say that. He, that guy's good. He's smooth, man.
Very smooth.
It's gonna make him change.
I'm just a boy with a new haircut,
and that's a pretty nice haircut.
Charger like a puzzle, hitmen wearing muzzles. Hesitate to die, look around. The second drummer drowned, this telephone is found. Crazy band start up each and every day. I saw another one just the other day, a special new band. I don't remember lying, I don't remember lying, I don't remember a word, but I don't care, I care, I really don't care. Did you see the drummer's head? We'll be right back.
some must. No big hair. Songs mean a lot when songs are bought, and so are you. Face right down to the practice room. Tension and fame's a career.
Okay, we're currently halfway through an interview that I did this morning with Bob from Pavement. He plays keys and percussion and sings in Pavement. This is part two, where we just get into some more classic, grunted out interview questions.
How do you define what you do, and how did you come to do it?
I just play, I'll tell you exactly the answer to that, Johnny, is I play children's toys and I scream.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I basically figured out my role and had accomplished all the skill set required by the time I was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And then over the last 45 plus years, I've just honed those children's toys and screaming skills into what at this point, after over 30 years of being in this band, of just complete perfection of children's toys and screaming.
Nice. Describe your first musical memory.
My first musical memory that pops into my head is when I was 12 years old. My family went and saw a Billy Joel concert at Richmond Coliseum in Virginia, and we had pretty bad seats. And we were sitting behind a row of people that were smoking really huge joints. And at the time, I think I'd smelled marijuana before, but I'd never actually seen it actively used. Keep in mind, I was 12. And yes. One of the row of people smoking weed at this 52nd Street Billy Joel tour in front of us, particularly like enjoying a long drag of a joint during like, you know, the Piano Man or something, was a pregnant woman. And I remember my mother leaning over and asking and telling her, lying to her and saying, her exact words were, "Could you please refrain from smoking marijuana? My daughter has asthma." And the woman just completely disregarded my mother and just took a massive toke off of a joint. It was just, yeah, I remember that. I remember like sort of getting into Billy Joel, but being, finding it more remarkable, just the open use and pure enjoyment of the fans of Billy Joel's love and adoration of marijuana.
Fantastic. Describe your best musical memory to date.
No, my best musical memory to date would probably be, that's a tough one. I would have to say that one time when I was in college, this would be like 1985, I stole my, on a whim, we kind of found out last second, about 60 miles away from where I went to school, which was in Charlottesville, Virginia, there was a concert going on in Lexington, Virginia, and myself and my roommate, Rich Walker, I stole my sister's car, which was a bad idea. I stole it like at 7 o'clock at night and I returned it at 4 in the morning. Of course, this is pre-cell phone, very yes. much pre-cell phone.
Yep.
So she thought that her car was stolen. I stole her car and I went and saw REM and the Minutemen play.
Oh, nice.
And this would have been about 2 weeks before D. Boone sadly passed away in a van accident. So unknowingly, it was Last Chance Saloon, but it was a really, really memorable gig. And then I sort of deepened the divide between myself and my sister by returning her car at 4 in the morning with a back left tire that was flat. Some nearly 40 years later, the relationship has been repaired.
Yes.
But yeah, without her Dodge Colt station wagon, I would not have been able to see one of the best concerts of my life. And it was a mind blowing one.
Nice. Where do you feel artistic progression leads?
Boy, that's a tough question, Johnny. I'm not really considering myself an artist. Mm-hmm. I think really artistic progression never ends, would be my guess. I mean, there is no finality to it. I mean, yeah, if I think about the art that I really appreciate, or that impresses me, and again, like, I'm no, you know, well-studied judge of art. I'm just, you know, into the aesthetics and stuff like that.
Yes.
There is no such thing, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Certainly not in music. I mean, even my favorite piece of music, which is, you know, I think by most considered art, I wouldn't consider perfect. I have heard people use that expression, like, this is like the perfect pop song. Mm-hmm. I don't really get that. It's all situational, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like candy or something.
Yes.
Like, this is like, I'm about to eat the perfect blueberry.
Mm.
You know, so who knows?
How do you define success?
How's that for a shit answer?
Yeah. you've given me some really good ones, so.
Success. I think success would just be, you know, just to sound like anybody else.
Yes.
Is the fortune of being able to sleep under a roof and eat a meal. I mean, art can be good enough. I mean,
yes.
I don't think that, you know, there's a lot of really unfortunate people out there, so I don't really overdo it.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I'm absurdly lucky to have bred and owned racehorses and made a living off of being in a band that was largely crap when we started. I mean, like, just the idea of getting paid to do a gig seems absurd in hindsight. So, you know, I mean, if I look back at, I'm one of the most fortunate people you'll ever meet, Johnny.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Now, describe something you haven't created yet that you'd like to create.
Well, I'd like to create a better racehorse. I mean, I just had a filly and a colt the other day in England, and I've got a pregnant mare right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've bred a lot of good horses over the years, and a lot of them have been winners. But, yeah. I mean, basically, when you own a broodmare and you mate her with a stallion every year, that's the closest that I get to creation.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the most important thing is you're hoping to breed a sturdy thoroughbred that can withstand training and wants to compete, wants to be an equine athlete. And the idea of getting a good one, that would certainly be an aspiration.
Excellent. And something non-musical that you're looking forward to? I guess you can't answer that with the horse racing side of things and breeding, but something non-musical you're looking forward to?
Oh, I'm always looking forward to, it's been a long time since I've wet a line. You know, it's a long time. I do enjoy surf casting. So basically when the smoke clears, and I realized I was in West Australia the other day. I was at a place called Busselton, which is a couple of hours south of Perth, and I was walking along the beach. And I hadn't been to a beach in many, many years because I live in the Midwestern United States, and beaches are a long, long way away. And I think I would just like to get up really early in the morning and surf cast, just fish for a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
I swear I'm not stoned.
Yeah. you've obviously got a couple of days off in Aussie, so maybe you'll get a chance.
Yeah, we got one today. We're heading up to Brisbane. Yeah, who knows? I've had a great time. So, again, it's really good to be in this part of the world because it just doesn't seem like, it seems like you're part on tour, part on vacation, and that's not the way it is when you're like going from Seattle to Denver to KC to Minneapolis to Chicago for two, then to Detroit, then to Toronto. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, touring is a great job. Don't get me wrong. Like, being in a band, touring is a great job. But, like, it's not as glamorous as it looks on paper until you come to this part of the world. So, yeah, like, skipping along here, then, you know, from Brisbane to Sydney to Melbourne, hopping over doing Auckland and Wellington is about as good as it gets. Hey, Johnny. Hey, you're listening to Johnny. This is Bob McSanders from Pavement. You're listening to Johnny. I think he calls it his drive show on 95 BFM, Auckland.
girlfriend and she's eating her fingers like they're just another meal. But she waits there in the levee while she's mixing cocktails with a plastic. All the shiny ribs you wear on the protein delta strip in an abandoned house, but I will wait there. I'll be waiting forever. I'm waiting, 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 waiting.
Bob, who provides vocals, percussion, harmonica and keyboard and Pavement. He's been cruising in Pavement maybe since the late 80s.